Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We've got three amazing guests this week. We start off with Marcia Egan of Inbox Detox. She has great tips on how to stay on top of your email account, keeping it organized and effective. We then chat with Lavalife.com's Kim Hughes. She talks about spring cleaning your dating life and finding new ways to make your single life more vibrant so you can find your special someone. We then talk with Christine Eisner on how to best meld your lives together when you decide to move in with your mate. And then we wrap things all up with an awesome remix from Katy Perry, Part of Me.
Capture your need for sound.
No matter how hard we try, it is very difficult to stay on top of all of our electronic mail. It doesn't help that most of us have multiple email addresses and we are constantly fluttering back and forth between them trying to stay caught up. To help us get a handle on our inboxes is Marcia Egan, author of Inbox Detox and The Habit of Email Excellence. Marcia, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
I'm happy to be here, Kelly.
So, Marcia, so many of us have not one, but multiple email accounts that I believe take up a lot of time. Overall, I guess, what is the most important aspect to adhere to when it comes to your email?
So you have about 5 hours, because you let in with a number of email accounts. And one of the most important things about being able to manage all of your stuff and all of your work is to simplify. So there may be people that have several email accounts, and to the degree that they can have fewer accounts, that will serve them better. I actually have two email accounts. One is a backup in case the first one doesn't work, but I have a primary email account. And some people will definitely need to have different email accounts because of different businesses or different work, but sometimes what I like to tell people is it's important to stop doing things too. Just because you started an email account several years ago, if it's not serving you, get rid of it. Let's be as simple as we can be, because every time you have to go into different email accounts, you're wasting time.
Now, some research that I've read suggests that an average person can actually receive and send up to 110 email messages a day. To me, that is insane.
But it's true. And the research that you have is borne out in corporate America. The average middle to senior level executive is getting receiving 105 emails a day, not even sending them. So if you got 100 pieces of postal mail every day, you would probably feel overwhelmed. And that's one of the things that we need to deal with, because email has become commerce. And so it's just like if you're overweight, you can't just stop eating forever. You're going to have to, with email, you can't stop receiving email. You have to learn how to manage it. And that can be a real challenge. The people who do it well have a definite competitive advantage over others.
I know that something that hampers me is the fact that some emails I can't sort of deal with right away because of time constraint reasons. And then other emails, I need to hold on to them for a while for whatever reason, especially if it's a work email, it might be something that's coming up in a week or so that I'm going to have to revisit. So this ends up seeing my inboxes, you know, overloaded fairly often. And I hate clutter. So I try to manage it. But how do you tackle stuff where, you know, it's something that you can't deal with right away and you're going to have to, because I'm sure there's many people that it's something that for work purposes or whatever, they can't deal with it right away.
Well, that's a great question. And that's one of the biggest questions that people struggle with. What we want to do, first of all, I actually came up with the 12 steps to curing your email addiction. And so it's almost a process to go through to be able to understand how all of this works. But to give you the Cliff Notes version of it, the first thing that's important for you to do is at every email you look at, decide something. Instead of look at it and go, I'll decide later. And that's with everything in your life, actually. But with email, it becomes even more important. And what I like to recommend to people is that if you see an email and you know you need to look at it later, I recommend that you move it to another folder and set a reminder to look at it later rather than keeping it in your inbox. We have a nasty habit of using our inbox as a to-do list, and if we are doing that, it ends up being the most dysfunctional to-do list you could have because it's disorganized, it's not in piles, it's not in files. The subject headings are many times vague, so we spend a lot of time scrolling up and down our inbox to try and figure out what to work next. So in your example, you're busy, you know you need to, let's say you get an email that says your annual renewal for this membership is due March 2nd. What I suggest you do is you don't leave it in your inbox. You put it into a, I like to call them action folders. You drag it into an action folder, and then you set yourself a reminder for when you're actually going to pay that bill. It might be, you know, February 28th or something like that. So there's a lot more to this, but there are several things you can do with an email. Number one is delete, and I like to recommend voraciously deleting. That eliminates clutter. Another is do. In other words, you can handle it right at that moment, but in many situations, as you mentioned, that's not appropriate. Another is to defer, which is what we just talked about, and another one is to delegate. So there, if you're in a situation where you can give it to someone else to do, there are all these D's. But what we don't want to do is delay. You know, we want to, the big D is decide what you're going to do. And if you're going to defer it, then set up a deferral process that works for you.
And with regards to making a decision right away, is there a plan? Because, for example, when I have all these emails coming in, you know, I try to delete right away because sometimes I've gotten spammed or whatever it is, or just something that it's a quick reminder so I can delete it right away because I know what's going on. But sometimes it's something that, you know, I could maybe deal with, but I'm not sure if I have time. Is there like a time limit that you can say something like, I don't know, if this is going to take me less than 5 minutes to deal with, I should deal with it now?
I am glad you asked that question because I like to recommend to people that if something can be done in 2 minutes, or less, not 5 minutes, 2 minutes or less, do it, regardless of priority. And the reason for this is you can spend 2 minutes on anything. And let's just say you emptied out your inbox, you go to lunch, you come back, and you have 14 items in your inbox. If, I call it the 2 minute rule, if you say to yourself, anything that I can handle in 2 minutes or less, I'm going to handle. The absolute maximum amount of time you will spend on that newly received stuff is 14 times 2 minutes, 28 minutes. But the reality is, a lot of those you're going to delete immediately, and if you're going to decide to defer it, it will take you 10, 20 seconds to do that. So it's not going to take you 28 minutes. It'll probably take you 14 or 15 minutes to sort what has come in. And this way, it gives people permission to work on, it may not be the most important stuff, but it's clutter. And email creates a lot of clutter. And by going in and using that 2 minute rule, you're going to eliminate clutter. And here's an example. I get an email, I'm on the board of a charity, and they say to me, we're going to nominate a new person to be on the board. We need your vote. Please print this, sign it, and fax it back. Most important thing to me today? No. Can I do it in 2 minutes or less? Yes. So I print it out, I sign it, I fax it back. It took me 90 seconds to do that. Now, if I didn't do that, I would get a reminder the next week, and a reminder the next week, and this actually happened to me because I had been triaging my work. And then the day before the meeting, I get a panic phone call from the head of the thing saying, we need you to drop everything and sign this because the person's coming tomorrow and we didn't have a quorum. So sometimes you can eliminate future clutter by handling some of that stuff that only takes a few minutes. Now, if it's going to take 10 minutes, I don't feel that way. If it takes 2 minutes or more, then we need to think about triaging the work and setting priorities for it.
Joining us on the show is Marcia Egan, author of Inbox Detox and the Habit of Email Excellence. Make sure to check her out at inboxdetox.com. What are your feelings on spam filters? Because, for example, my email account at work is fairly good. Usually I'm getting stuff just for work. Although, because of what I do as a radio announcer, we often get lots of email with people, you know, wanting us to play a song or come check out this event that's happening in the city. So I get a lot of that. That I am very quick at deciding and booting to the curb, like, right away, which is good. But when it comes to spam filters, like, what's your thought process on that?
Any spam filter that works is good. And there is a lot of spam out there. And anything that keeps you from having to manage something is good. I don't necessarily recommend one over another, and sometimes the organization will have chosen spam filters that are more viable than others. But anything you don't have to touch helps your productivity. Now, one of the things about spam is, and many of your listeners may not be aware of this, but if they get spam and there's a link at the bottom saying, please unsubscribe, unless it's a safe address that you actually know the person who added you to their list, if you click that link, you've told the spammer that you are a live email address. And these people sell these email addresses to other spammers. So the worst thing you can do is to click on a link in any spam. What you want to do instead is have a spam filter that does that, and to be voracious about attacking your spam.
Now, something else I wanted to ask you in regards to a work environment is the fact that, you know, some of us, depending on which workplace we're at, you know, we have a certain limit of capacity about how much your email account is going to serve. Now, for example, with me at work, I often get audio files. And so my limit gets capped very quickly because we only have a certain amount. So I'm constantly having to monitor my email account at work to make sure I don't go over the limit. But is having a limit set by your workplace a good thing in a way? Because it almost forces you to be on top of things, I feel.
Well, the reason that they have limits like that is that if they didn't and everybody had maximized their bandwidth or their capacity, it can take down the system. So that's why businesses need to do things like that. So that's, I mean, it's protecting the business, first of all. But there is this secondary benefit, which it almost forces the individuals in the business to manage their own capacity. And it can be very frustrating, but it actually will help you not overburden your company system. In situations where you have very large files, what I like to recommend is that you save the file to a hard drive, and whatever the file name is, save it into the hard drive, and then in the email, make sure that that file name is obvious so that when you file it in your email system, you know where to go get it in your hard drive. I'm not sure if I explained that well.
Yeah.
But your hard drive has a lot more capacity than your email system many times.
Can you explain how email has become the interrupter of the universe?
Yes, I can. Well, email, first of all, I don't want to come across as email is a bad thing. Email could be one of the best inventions of the 20th century. It actually could be because it is fast, it's effective, it's efficient. I mean, it's global. There are so many, it's inexpensive. There's so many things that are good about email, but anything used to excess can be a problem. Well, what has happened, when we first started out with email, we might get five a day, but if the average person is getting 105 a day during an 8-hour workday, they could conceivably be interrupted 100 times from what they're working on if they have their email and inbox open and dinging and flashing. And so, I mean, people used to bellyache about telephone calls interrupting their work. Well, if they have the bells and the flashes enabled on their computer and they're working on something and that thing dings, you're interrupted. If you look up even for a millisecond, if you were, let's say you were writing an important letter, you can't pick up where you were interrupted. You have to reread the letter, get back in the zone, oh, maybe go get a cup of coffee, do a comfort break, whatever. But it takes people time to recover from interruptions. So the best strategy is to minimize your interruptions. And, I mean, I'm hard-pressed to come up with anything that interrupts us more than email. The phone used to be one of those, but email, if we're getting 105 emails a day, could be interrupting us 105 times a day.
On average, how many times should you be checking your email on a daily basis?
I don't want to be making company policy for anybody out there. What we do recommend for the average business is check your email 5 times a day. First thing in the morning, mid-morning, after lunch, not before lunch, or you might not go to lunch, or it might ruin your lunch, mid-afternoon, and 15 to 20 minutes before the end of the workday. Now, I'm probably going to have to pick some of your listeners up off the floor after mentioning that. But when you think about, if you check your email only 5 times a day, what that means is between the times you check your email, you have anywhere from an hour to 90 minutes of uninterrupted work. And we get a lot done when we're not interrupted. So if we turn off all the, you know, bells, whistles, and flashes and shut our email down for an hour and a half and work on other stuff, people are going to wonder how they became so productive all of a sudden. Now, there's a question that you're probably going to want to ask or that your listeners will ask that dovetails with this 5 times a day checking, and it's like, but how can I be responsive to my customers? People expect me to respond immediately. Well, now, you're in the news business, so it may not apply to you. I came from the insurance business. It applied to me. Nothing critical happened in the hour that I didn't check my email.
Okay.
And there have been studies that show that anyone sending an email doesn't even wonder whether you got it for 24 hours. So why are we putting this unvalidated thing on ourselves that says we must respond immediately? We don't have to. We're not saying no, don't respond. We're saying respond in good time. And everyone out there has been in an hour, hour and a half meeting. They come back. They do their email. The sky didn't fall in. And it actually validates the fact that you can go for an hour to an hour and a half without having all those dings and flashes interrupt you.
When it comes to the overall cleanup of your inbox, should you actually set a date with yourself like once a week or once every 10 days to sort of go through your inbox and then purge anything that you may have missed or haven't dealt with yet?
I say whatever works for you. And some people are systematic and they like to do that once a week. Some people, whenever they are in a folder or a file, add the extra half a minute to delete the extraneous stuff. It is important to delete the clutter that's no longer useful to you. And one of the places that there's a lot of good stuff to be deleted is in your sent mail. There are people who have tens of thousands of items in their sent mail that they just have never looked at. And many of them have attachments and could have the possibility of bringing their system down. So that's a really great place to start.
What do you say to all the alerts that we get from social media? Because I find that to be something that jams up the inbox the most is when you're getting an alert from Facebook that, hey, someone's birthday is today.
What I say is, this is my recommendation to your listeners, and that is set up a folder, or if you're in Gmail, I forget what they call them. Anyway, there are ways to do it in Gmail and in Outlook and in others, where, and then set up a rule for all of your social media to go directly to that folder. And then you go in when you want to go in, because, yes, Facebook, LinkedIn, Plaxo, all of these social media sites are sending you alerts, and it's increasing the number of emails you're getting and thus the number of interruptions. So as an example, I have a folder that says Facebook, and I set a rule that anything coming from Facebook goes directly into that folder. Now, I have Outlook, and the folder turns black when there's an item in there that I haven't viewed. And when I'm in the mood to check my Facebook stuff, which I like getting, I go in there. But that keeps, by doing this, it keeps you from being interrupted.
And finally, I just wanted to ask you, what top tip would you give to us, all of us overloaded inbox people, on how to sort of keep our head above water and to remember, I guess, what to do if we start to sink again?
Okay. The top tip is turn the dang ding off, which is to turn off all the dings and flashes that interrupt you. The goal is to minimize your interruptions. So do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Don't do anything until you turn off those dings and flashes that are interrupting you. That's number one. Number two is check your email in the longest interval you can stand. We like to recommend 90 minutes or 5 times a day. If you don't think that'll work for you, do it every hour. But start long, because if you say, I'm only going to check every 15 minutes, you'll never expand beyond that. So minimizing your interruptions, believe it or not, will give you much more productivity in a day's time. And here's the reason. Every interruption takes you time to recover, and the studies show that it takes an average person an average of 4 minutes to recover from any interruption, not even to handle the interruption. So if someone walks by your office and says, hi, Kelly, and you look up, you've been interrupted. You got to go back to rereading what you were working on, getting back in the zone. It takes you an average of 4 minutes to get back in that zone. Now, if you eliminate only 15 interruptions in a day, you have found an hour of productivity. So this is serious business in terms of people being able to accomplish what it is they want to accomplish. If you want to be productive, stop the interruptions or minimize them. So those two are my biggest tips for your listeners.
Excellent, Marcia. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Well, sure. And you can find lots of other tips at InboxDetox.com.
Excellent.
We have lots of free resources and even our book, the one that you mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Marcia. Again, that is Marcia Egan, author of Inbox Detox and the Habit of Email Excellence. And as she mentioned, check out her website, InboxDetox.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
As we march full on into spring, it is a time of renewal and rejuvenation, and that includes taking a peek at your personal life and figuring out if you have gotten into a rut when it comes to your dating life. To help give us some ideas how to freshen things up and get ourselves back on track is singles and dating expert for Lavalife.com, Kim Hughes. Kim, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Kelly, it is such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Now, can you explain the idea behind relationship spring cleaning?
Yes, I can. And it's pretty straightforward. As we do with our houses, we sort of lift things up and sort of check on stuff that's been in the fridge for a while and see how the expiry dates are doing. Similarly, in your dating life, it's a time of just sort of having a look at what's working and what's not working and making changes accordingly. People, it's so easy to get into a rut, especially in wintertime, maybe not this winter, but when you tend to be inside a lot and go into the same places day after day. So the coming of spring is a good time just to have a look around and see what things you can change to improve your dating life.
And so is that why now is the best time to actually confront your relationship past?
You know, I think it is a good time, and there's a few reasons for that. One is, as you mentioned at the top of the show, it's kind of a time of renewal. People are thinking about, you know, newness and new things. So that's something to think about. Also, I think just in our our kind of carriage and the way we carry ourselves as the days begin to get warmer, you're shedding some clothing and you tend just to be freer. So it's a time to sort of think about how, what kind of messages you're sending out to potential other daters, potential other singles.
Just like everything else in life, I assume that it's easy to get into a routine with your dating, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
You know, it's true. It's amazing how small the sort of circumference of our lives can be. You know, you get up in the morning and you go to the same coffee shop on your way to work and you go to the same office. And, you know, a lot of times as people are doing that, they're kind of, you know, into their own little world. They've got earbuds in or they're looking at their handheld, whatever, not really connected with what's going on around them. And, you know, suddenly you wake up and you go, wow, I'm alone. A lot of us do. Mm-hmm. Some 14 million people in Canada are single. So it is easy to get into these ruts. And it's worth just sort of stepping aside, I think, again, at spring and just sort of thinking about little things that you can do that can have a really big impact on your dating life.
So can you give us a couple of tips about how to sort of bust free of our relationship and dating routines?
Yes, there's a couple of really simple things that can have a big impact. One is just change up your routine. If you go to the same coffee shop or the same pub, or the same, you know, local library branch, mix it up. Go somewhere else, just to another neighborhood. It can feel like a whole other world. So that's a very simple thing. Another thing that I mentioned earlier, just be connected to your surroundings. I mean, I take public transit every day, and I'm always amazed by how people are sitting there, you know, on the subway or on the bus, and they're not even looking around. They're just looking at their handheld. They're not connected. I mean, the girl or guy of their dreams could be sitting right beside them, and they wouldn't even notice it. So that's a really good thing, is to stay connected with your surroundings. You know, another one is just to use the people in your orbit as kind of a de facto matchmaking service. And by that I mean, just make sure that if you're single and you're looking to date, make sure that everybody that you talk to knows that, because somebody knows somebody who might be someone that you'd like to go out with. So, you know, tell your hairdresser, tell your yoga instructor. Make sure everybody knows you're single and that you're available.
Joining us on the show is singles and dating expert for lavalife.com, Kim Hughes. You mentioned a few moments ago, Kim, about staying connected to your surroundings. And I wanted to ask you something, because I feel like it's a bit of a double-edged sword, which is technology. Technology can help you get out there in a way, in the fact that you can be on Twitter, you can be on Facebook, you know, all these other social media networks that are presenting you to other people. But then when you are in a setting like being on the subway or the metro, I feel you can be so internal now because you have all these devices that you don't have to look up.
Yeah, I think double-edged sword is exactly that. So, you know, social networking can allow you to potentially reach many more people and people outside of your town than you could have 20 years ago. But yes, people are sort of slaves to these handheld devices. So maybe that's kind of the thing, too, as part of we were talking about relationship spring cleaning. You know, for people to stop for just a moment and give a thought to how much time they spend, you know, looking into their iPad, how much time they need to spend looking into their iPad, and if there's kind of a healthy, comfortable compromise between staying connected but also being a human being who's functioning in the world around them.
And what's your thoughts as we continue the sort of social media angle about how, you know, you can be on social media and, again, meeting someone, you know, in Australia or Japan. But I was reading an article recently that said that when you're on a social media network, because of who you are and your tastes, it sounds like you can actually become very insular. So do you need to and sort of meet the same people or sort of stay in a bit of a rut that way? Do you think that, you know, just as you had said, go to a different coffee shop, you should be exploring new avenues of your social media networks?
Yes, I think that's a very good point. And certainly with respect to something like online dating, where people are able to create a very specific kind of, you know, shopping list, if you will, of qualities that they're looking for in another person. They're well served by thinking about what's really, really meaningful, what core qualities are really meaningful, and what stuff you can sort of let slide a little bit. I mean, for example, you know, we tend to think that we want someone who's a certain height or a certain ethnicity or something like that when we're looking for a potential partner. And, you know, those things are nice to have, but they really are, at the end of the day, quite superficial. So I think, you know, maybe setting that stuff aside and just sort of focusing on core qualities is something for people to think about. And that's certainly true in social media. I mean, you know, we have a type, but, you know, speaking to someone who's hilarious and interesting and really kind and compassionate within a social media or online dating forum, despite the fact that they may not fit your superficial criteria, is well worth it.
In the job that you do, I actually wanted to ask this because you were speaking about types. And again, I think if you were to sit down with someone and you're like, what's your type? And then someone will sit there and do a laundry list of characteristics that they have maybe had in their mind for 20 years about, you know, this is the person that I want. Is it important for people to realize that that's probably not the person you're going to end up with in a way, apart from the core values? Because I know that my list, all the people that I have been with as in relationships, were not on that list at all.
Yeah, I mean, I can sort of see that point. And it's a tricky thing because, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants. And there are some things that you can rationalize it until the cows come home. But if you're just generally attracted to a certain kind of person, then, you know, it's very difficult to dissuade yourself from being attracted to that kind of person. I don't know that I have the ultimate answer for that, other than to say that maybe like anything else, just being aware of what you're doing, trying to recognize if there are patterns in your dating habits. I mean, you know, it sounds harsh, but the one common denominator in all of your failed relationships is you as a person, as an individual, not you personally, Kelly, but, but the individual, right? So obviously, if you're not happily married, then you're doing something that isn't working towards your ultimate end. So think about what that might be and how you can maybe fix it.
Joining us on the show this week again is singles and dating expert for lavalife.com, Kim Hughes. Kim, if you are a shy person, how can you make things easier on yourself to meet new people?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I guess a couple of things that we've touched on already could work. You know, get people to do some of the work for you, people that you trust and people that you're comfortable with and don't mind expressing yourself to. Make sure that they know that you're single and keeping an eye out for somebody that they might want to set you up with or sort of push you in that direction. Online dating, again, is a really good way for shy people to be able to reach out because you have the safety and the security of our kind of proprietary email system and instant messaging system. So you can really take your time to get to know somebody before you have to meet them and sort of work up the courage to meet them there. Another thing is just, you know, don't be afraid to be shy. I mean, there's something kind of endearing about someone who's shy. And, you know, if you catch someone's eye on the bus, for example, and kind of look away and smile, I mean, people can read body language. They're going to know that you're kind of shy, but maybe kind of interested. And again, maybe they'll take their first move.
Some people are very uncomfortable when it comes to talking about themselves and opening up to new people. How should you get over that hurdle?
Oh, boy, you're asking questions today. You know, I mean, I guess if you know that you're uncomfortable talking about yourself, then maybe just don't. I mean, there's a lot of ways and a lot of things you can talk about on a first date in any situation. Or you could just be frank and say, you know what, I'm a little bit shy. I'm a little bit inarticulate when it comes to trying to discuss my likes and dislikes. Why don't we talk about something neutral? And then take it there.
And when you're out and about and trying to meet new people, whether you're a guy or a girl, is it important to have one of your friends with you, you know, as a quote-unquote wingman, or should you really sort of do this alone on occasion?
Well, I would say do both and better your chances. I mean, you know, the wingman can be really effective in terms of, you know, maybe facilitating a situation where you have an opportunity to speak to someone or maybe eyeballing someone that you might have otherwise bypassed. At the same time, it can be intimidating for someone to be approached or to approach you if you're in the company of someone else. I mean, that's certainly true in a bar situation. So maybe do a bit of both and just see whatever works. I mean, put lots of tools in your dating toolbox until the right one comes along.
Now, as we've been sort of talking about, you know, spring is the time to dust yourself off and do some spring cleaning with your relationship and your dating life. But is it important to sort of be self-aware throughout the year so that you don't fall into bad habits or a rut continuously?
Well, sure. Of course it is. Ideally, then we'd be having these sorts of discussions every single day. But you know, people don't, and they get caught up in their lives and the workaday aspects of their lives. So that's why, you know, we sort of decided to seize the moment. And today being, you know, March the 20th, being the launch of spring, is a good time to really think about what you're doing, where your dating life is going, and how it can be improved.
And what's your top piece of advice for someone, you know, as they reflect on their dating life and try to, you know, march forward and move forward and make their, you know, relationship lives better?
I think the most important thing is just to keep it in perspective. People have a tendency to beat themselves up and really get down on themselves because they're single and family's asking when they're going to start producing grandchildren and stuff like that. You know, being single is not a life sentence. It's a passage. And if you really want to meet someone, if that's high on your criteria, sooner or later it will happen. So just kind of enjoy the ride and try not to be too down about it.
I'm really glad that you said that, because I think a lot of people almost even push away potential people if they're so much in their own headspace that they're not seeing the flowers, if you will, and, you know, because they're so focused on I'm not with someone, when they could be maybe meeting someone if they would actually enjoy the fact that they are single for the moment.
Well, that's it. And you know, we do broadcast our sort of interior monologue, whether we know it or not. I mean, if you're happy with who you are and you're content with where you are in your life, then people are going to pick up on that. Whereas if you're walking around feeling like you're, you know, you're crappy and your life is crappy and everything is crappy, then people are going to see a person who's broadcasting crappy.
That is true. Kim, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly.
That's singles and dating expert for LavaLife.com, Kim Hughes, right here on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
As much as we love the idea of coming together and living with our mate, it can be a challenging process to merge those two worlds together. And even after you're married, you never know what's going to happen. To help us understand how to make the transition much easier is lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living, A Back to Basics Guide to a More Balanced Lifestyle, Christine Eisner. Christine, welcome to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Christine, I think a lot of couples, you know, get caught up in the romance of moving in together, but then forget that the, you know, there's a harsh reality that they are indeed merging two tastes. What is the first step a couple should do to make, you know, things start off on the right foot?
I love the fact that you're doing this topic, because so many people have this idea, as you say, that everything just sort of magically comes together and, you know, there's going to be a place of honor for his collection of racetrack shot glasses and also for her wonderful portrait of her great aunt, you know, Marie. And you know, sometimes when it gets down to those concrete aspects of setting up home, it's not as easy as you think it might be. One of the things that I think is the most important, and it really is at the foundation of comfort living, is the idea of really focusing in on your own wants and needs. And when you are a couple, the important thing is to help the other person understand that. Because all of a sudden, if his, you know, his shot glass collection, I'll go with that example, if you understand that his shot glass collection are memories, that each glass is a memory of a different experience, then, you know, it becomes more than just a collection of shot glasses. And, you know, the same thing, if he understands what her relationship is with this aunt, then it just helps. So I think that's really the first step in the process.
And, you know, I think, Christine, a lot of women get caught up in the notion that they are the keepers of the household and that what they want, you know, sort of design-wise, lifestyle-wise, is what should end up happening in the home. What do you tell women so they sort of take their mate's taste into account?
Well, you know, I say a lot of times people think that the house is the woman's, or, you know, whoever is that person at home. And then, you know, men end up creating, you know, the ever increasingly popular man caves, whether it's in the garage, whether it's in the basement, or, you know, or maybe they get a study. But I think really, you know, women need to create space for themselves too. Instead of sort of generally having the whole house, I think women need a she cave. And I think if she has her place and he has his place, then the rest of the space becomes more open to both of their inputs. So, you know, that's a key part, and I think it's this oh, everything but the garage is for her, actually ends up doing people a disservice.
And with regards to that, Christine, how would that work? Because, for example, let's just say there was no garage for his stuff and there's like only one sort of extra room. Like, how do you decide who gets that, or can there be like it kind of split down the middle?
Well, I think, you know, it could be a shelf. It could be a wall. It could be, you know, it doesn't have to be a room. I mean, especially because not everybody lives in, you know, in big houses. So it can be, you know, the equivalent of an altar, you know, of a little special place where his collection is, where his sort of, you know, treasures, I call them treasures. In comfort living, I basically am giving the readers, giving people a new language for talking about quality of life. So it really isn't about, you know, square footage. It's about meaning. And actually, there's a wonderful exercise that's in my book, and you have a copy too, so feel free to put it on your website or whatever. But it's on page 16 of my book, and basically it's a grid of words, and I use this with couples and families and individuals, and it is amazing what it does. But I ask people to just circle the words that describe how you want to feel in your space. So it might be friendly, traditional, stimulating, casual, vibrant, glitzy, romantic, whatever. And, you know, he'll circle his words, she'll circle her words, and of course they're not going to be the same, but it's really amazing because when I work with couples, you know, I help them focus on the words that they have in common. And so all of a sudden, that drawing a line in the room isn't as important, because if you start to have an understanding for where the other person's coming from, what they want, like if a guy wants a room, you know, wants to feel like he's in a masculine space, well, you know, if she really understands that that's an important thing to him, then you end up coming up with these opportunities to gift the other person. And it's like, you know what, I'm going to choose this kind of a frame around these photographs, or this kind of a rug, or this kind of fabric for the you know, the throw pillows. And all of a sudden, just because of being more aware of each other and where you're coming from, those, you know, that you end up not on opposite sides of the net, you end up on the same side of the net, and it makes a huge difference. I see it time and time again with people I work with.
I have to ask you about something you brought up just a few moments ago with regards to the space. And you said, you know, certain couples don't have a lot of space, and that, you know, if they do just have a shelf, it's enough for them. Is it because of the fact that it is their shelf, they get to put whatever they want on it, so that's what will give them sort of peace of mind? Because I think everybody growing up, especially if they've grown up in a family where, you know, they've had to share a room with someone else or whatever it is, or, you know, even being in university and being in cramped quarters, when you do get that house or you do get that larger apartment, I think we all just wish that we could have that man cave or she cave to put all our stuff. But you're saying that just a small space, it can work.
I think it absolutely can work, because I really don't think it's about stuff. I don't think quality of life is about stuff. I don't think it's about how expensive something is. I think it's just about these messages that objects and elements and memories can give us. And, you know, sometimes people that are in big sprawling houses, I think it's actually easier to get lost. It's easier to become less intentional about how you set up your surroundings, and more importantly, the routines that you do in where you live or where you work. So in a way, the person who has the small apartment and can just carve out a little corner of a room, or, you know, the night table, or, you know, a mantle or a shelf, or a, you know, objects on a tray, you know, on a side table, that can end up being actually even more powerful than trying to do it in a whole house, because it can get a little bit you know, diffused.
Joining us on the show is lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living, Christine Eisner. Make sure to check her out, www.comfortlivingbychristine.com. How do you amicably decide who gets to keep what? Because I think, you know, a lot of guys would want to, you know, ditch her rose petal painting, and you know, the women might want to get rid of those peewee trophies, you know, throw them in the trash. Where is the happy medium, Christine?
Well, I think you have to be respectful and considerate of where each person is coming from. And again, if you approach it, the exercise that I talked about is incredibly helpful. And in communicating on what are the things that mean the most to you, if, you know, we can't have, you know, you can't combine two lives into one life or one and a half lives and not have some things go by the wayside. So I think it's really important to communicate the things that are most important, and then maybe they can come together. You know, if that painting is not the most important thing to her, well, then that's something that can go by the wayside. If it is important to her and he absolutely hates it, well, then maybe there's a place, you know, on her side of the bed, in her side of the bedroom, or maybe there's a wall in the bathroom where, you know, her sink is, so that she can see it every time she brushes her teeth. And it's not necessarily relegating it to the bathroom, but it actually is putting it in a place where, again, I talk about the routines, where it becomes part of the routine that is her life, not necessarily that is his life. So I think that you need to see, you know, you need to talk about where do your eyes go, and try to put those things in places where they're going to be touching the person who they mean most. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And a question I would have for you too is, I almost feel like, you know, if you are merging two worlds, it's almost an exercise as well of self-awareness, because I feel like if you, you know, like you said, you have to be understanding of your partner, and there is that happy medium where, you know, some things will probably have to go by the wayside. Do you think as a person, you need to become less defensive? Because I think a lot of people, you know, for example, you know, for me, I have all these karate trophies that I've acquired since I was 6 years old. And I'm sure some of them, or some people would think, you know, what the hell is she still doing with these things? But, you know, for me, they represent a specific day, a specific combat that I did. So they mean something to me. And I can't imagine parting with any of them. So how would I sort of work with that if someone else was like, what the hell is that?
Well, you know, I think we all, there's a word that I use called streamlining. People talk a lot about decluttering, but what streamlining is about, it's about getting rid of the obstacles in your life, the things that get in your way, but it's also about recognizing the things that are important to you. And I think that we each need to own up for our own treasures and our own obstacles before we get into the conversation with the other person. You know, so you have come to that conclusion that those are really important to you. You don't want to have him tell you something that is or isn't important to you when you haven't even figured that out for yourself. So I think that's a really important part of the process. Don't let your mate do the dirty work for you. You know, we have to step up to each of that process on our own. But then, in the case of those trophies, I've done this with my son, who has a lot of, he was a karate person too. But, you know, there is I created in his room, because they're now not part of his active life, but, you know, they are treasures, and they're bridges to a place that he was at in the past that was important to him. So I actually put up a shelf all around his room, but about 12 inches from the ceiling.
Oh, wow.
So it basically is a high shelf that's out of the way, but that is visible. And so you could put that into a place where it meant something to you. It could be in, you know, it could be just on one wall. But so it could be up there out of the way, or it could be just a shelf that you say, this is an important place, you know. And depending on how much of your presence you want it to be in, you either put it at, you know, right at eye level, or maybe you put that kind of a shelf around the perimeter of your closet. You know, the closets don't necessarily go all the way up to the ceiling, so maybe there's a way to store them, but in a way that respects them too. So those are some ideas as to how you might do that. But I do think it's really important, and that's where this recognizing what your treasures are and writing them down, both of you, writing them down, and you'd be surprised how someone says, "Wow, I didn't realize that was that important to you." And then all of a sudden you hear them saying, well, if that's the case, then maybe we can do this. And this is him speaking for your karate trophies. And it really is. And then in turn, you're saying, oh, you know, I didn't realize that those, you know, those matches, my husband came into our marriage with a whole big thing of matches from different restaurants. Well, we started to use them instead of them just being in a place. I've actually put them in different places around the house, and gradually we use them. 25 years later, we're now on to new matches.
Wow, that's amazing, and a great tip. And another area where I think, you know, things can get contentious is deciding on, you know, furniture versus electronics. You know, the man probably wants the flat screen and she might want to go with, you know, a coffee table or an armoire. How do you work that out, Christine?
Well, you know, I think that that's, you know, a matter, I mean, you know, most likely you don't have the money to do both at once. And so I think it's just sort of a, you know, a taking turns of working again. If there's a respect for the process, if it's not the only thing you'll ever be spending money on, then, you know, then maybe it's, well, you know, maybe we really need this to, you know, maybe the coffee table is really important because it creates a, what I call a campfire, a center of energy that draws you in. And if there's nothing there, then, you know, then you have something that's taking away from the comfort in a room. So if he understands why you want the coffee table, then maybe it becomes easier for him to say, you know what, you're right. I really don't have anywhere to put my feet or my drink or whatever. And you know, if you like that coffee table, great. But then she might say, well, you know, what kind of coffee table would you like? And, you know, so that might be how that discussion happens. If it ends up being the flat screen TV, then, you know, maybe if she has a little bit of a say in it, or maybe it's just that point where she says, you know what, sure, just go with it. But again, I think when you tap into the other person, instead of like digging your heels in the ground and saying, we're getting a flat screen TV and that's it. Well, you know, I mean, we're humans. I mean, I don't know about you, but I would dig my feet in on the other side.
And I'd say,
well, then I'm going to go spend the money on the coffee table. And then, you know, you're broke. You can't pay the rent.
And you know, it's funny you brought that up, you know, because if there is, you know, a real power struggle that's going on, Christine, is that when, you know, the couple should call in someone like yourself so that, you know, World War, you know, 14 doesn't break out? Because, I mean, you would hope that each couple could sort of work it out on their own, but, you know, if it's two strong personalities, one might not, you know, either of them might not be willing to back down.
It's a really good idea to call someone in because, you know, it's amazing how quickly, I mean, I'm talking about 20 minutes, a situation can diffuse. I mean, I worked with a couple and it was obvious that they were, you know, she was moving into his decorated bachelor pad and she was about 20 years younger and there was really no room for her. And I could sense that they were, some people sort of say, you know, you're sort of a house whisperer. I was like, well, more a lifestyle whisperer. But it was very easy to see that they were in pain about it. And, you know, I had them do the exercise. We talked through it together. I had them, you know, put down list their treasures. And all of a sudden, the whole tone of things changed. And the cool thing was that, you know, years later, you know, it was not a quickie kind of fix. It was something that they carried with them because they had a greater awareness of who they were and how they fit together and what they could do for each other, you know, most importantly.
Christine, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much. And I have to ask you, where can people get a copy of your book?
They can get a copy of it on my website, which, as you said, is comfortlivingbychristine.com. And it's also sold through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I won't say Borders right now because they're not they're not. But Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and on my website.
Oh, that's amazing, Christine. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
That's Christine Eisner again, a lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living. Check her out, www.comfortlivingbychristine.com.
Bring on the Remix. Dream.
Katy Perry with Part of Me, remixed by Liam Keegan on The Kelly Alexander Show. A big thank you going out to my guests this week, Marsha Egan, Kim Hughes, as well as Christine Eisner. As per usual, here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time from Dale E. Turner. Some of the best lessons we ever learn are learned from past mistakes. The error of the past is the wisdom and success of the future. Have an awesome week. If you want to reach me, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I'll chat soon.